Today is Women's Wednesday on Mind Talk, and I'm your host, Dr. Pamela Brewer. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. On Women's Wednesday, we focus on all things for and about women. Today's conversation is about teenage depression. And before we actually meet today's guest, I want to share with you some statistics having to do with teens and depression. And let me start by letting you know that teenage depression is actually a common problem. So many times adults will say, oh, I wish I had somebody paying my bills and I wish all I had to do was to go to school, and don't recognize that teenagers can experience depression. But in fact, approximately 20% of teens will experience depression before they reach adulthood. As a teenager, Tanika Jennings found herself in a seemingly irreversible state of depression. She felt hopeless, she felt lost, but somehow writing helped to change all of that for Tanika. Tanika Jennings, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you.
Tanika, in your book, The Girl with the Journal, you share a series of poems that you wrote during your struggle with depression. I'd like to start, actually, even before the book was written. Tell us a little bit about your very early life, where you were born, who lived in the household with you, those kinds of things.
Okay. I was born in Centerville, Illinois, and I lived with my stepdad and my mom. I had two brothers, two sisters, and my childhood was perfectly normal, no signs of depression. I did not start getting depression until I was 19, but I had a really normal childhood. I lived on the Air Force base with my stepdad and my mom, and I just had a completely normal childhood, no problems at all.
Well, tell me what school was like for you growing up. Do you have positive recollections of school? Was it a fun time for you?
Yes. I had many friends. Well, not many, but I had about like a small group of friends, and they were really supportive of me. We hung out and everything, and they would come to my house sometimes. But everything was normal until I hit like the age of about 16, 17.
And then things started to turn around.
Right.
What was happening in your, at 16, you were in high school?
Yes, correct.
Talk about your experiences from 16 on in high school. How was that for you?
It was, well, I had a, like, in middle school and elementary, it was all pretty normal, and those were happy memories. But when I hit high school was kind of a stressful time for me because I had one close best friend and not many, and I went to a big school that was where there was a lot of kids, and I didn't make many friends because the kids were kind of cold and I was kind of withdrawn by myself except for my best friend and his friends. And then my mom got breast cancer, and I was literally afraid she was going to die. That's when the depression started onsetting. Also, I had a boyfriend, and that was kind of a mistake, but my mom really didn't talk to me about it.
So it was around 16 that you became aware of your mom's illness, and there was a boyfriend who maybe wasn't the best choice for you.
Right.
Okay. And at 16, you know, it's really hard to make best choices. Was this a first boyfriend for you?
Yes.
So then, you know, how did you decide that you wanted him to be your boyfriend?
I met him through my best friend that I had, who was my friend in high school, the best friend I had, one of my only friends. And we met, it was like around Christmas time, and we all went to a store. My best friend was buying something for his father, and then he had my boyfriend with him, and he wasn't my boyfriend at first, but he had the guy with him, mm-hmm. and I met him, and I liked him.
What'd you like about him? Was he cute?
He was like, huh?
Was he cute?
Yes, he was cute, yes.
Okay, at 16, cute is really important.
Correct.
Okay. So he was cute. What else did you like about him?
I liked kind of how he was relaxed and and he didn't. He seemed different from some of the cold-hearted people I went to high school with.
Okay.
You know, because in high school, you know, they're interested in like and being cool. You know, and he didn't seem like that.
So he was kind of laid back and cute, and he seemed to be have a warmer personality than those folks you were going to school with.
Right, correct, yes.
Okay, so that sounds like at 16, that's all you need for a boyfriend. Did he go to the same school that you did?
No, we went to different schools.
And what was the age difference? Was there one?
There was only a year difference.
Okay. So he sounds like he was pretty good. Now, when you became aware of your mom's illness, what was that like for you? And who did you turn to, if anyone, for comfort as you were dealing with your mom's diagnosis?
It was very hard because I was so afraid my mother was going to die. I know that breast cancer can kill you. So I really had no one to turn to. I held it all inside, and it was taking its toll on my life, you know. And I couldn't talk to my brothers and sisters because I believe they also were scared. So I just really couldn't talk to them.
Okay.
And, yeah, we all were scared.
So it sounds like it was the family secret almost. Everybody knew about it, but nobody really talked about it.
Right.
In looking back now, at your age now, as you look back to what was going on in your household then, what do you think might have been helpful for you or even for the household in terms of dealing with your mother's illness?
Me and my brothers and sisters could have talked more, and we could have helped my mom out more because she survived from it and she got better, but looking back, we didn't help her out that much, you know.
My guess is that you were scared.
Yes, we were scared, and she was kind of afraid to ask for help because she doesn't really like to ask for help. So
again, it was a really big open secret that nobody talked about, which would make you feel even more uncomfortable, more frightened, perhaps more isolated. Did you talk to your best friend about your mom's illness?
No, I didn't. I should have, though, because my best friend, he was the main supporter of me. He was there all the time. We hung out a lot. So talking to him would have helped.
So who did you talk to? Anybody?
I don't know. I didn't talk to anybody about it.
Do you have a recollection of how your behavior may have changed in school and at home as you first, as the family first became aware of mom's illness?
Yes. In school, I got more withdrawn and just more quiet than anything, and more focused on my work and just trying to kind of put myself into my studies. And I was just hoping that my mom would
be okay.
Would be okay. Yes.
Did anyone notice or comment on the change in your behavior? Did any of your teachers ask you about being more withdrawn and more quiet?
No, they didn't. There was one teacher who noticed, and that was my math teacher. And she I know she liked me. And then she had me and my brother, and we both had her as a teacher. And I just remember her saying, "I wish you were more like your sister." So, I mean, I think she was concerned that she liked me, but she didn't bring it up.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it, because if she wanted your brother to be more like you, it sounds like she wanted him to be quiet the way you were.
Yeah.
Okay, which is not really all that helpful. You know,
it's so
nowadays, I mean, in theory, schools are very much different and very much more aware of the kinds of behavioral changes that can show up in their students who may be dealing with depression or anxiety. But it certainly sounds like then, not so much. Progression of your mom's illness. What was that like for the rest of the family and for your dad?
My stepdad, he was absent from it because him and her had split up like several years before.
Hmm.
So I think maybe he was a little scared too. It seemed like we all were, and he didn't really talked to her about it, and he didn't show up. And the reason was because my mom had a new boyfriend. There was someone living with us, and he was her boyfriend, and he didn't take it very well either. He seemed kind of angry about it.
Did that make any sense to you, that he seemed angry about it?
No, that didn't make any sense to me.
Mm-hmm. And how about the rest of the family? How did they react to your mom's boyfriend?
They didn't really do much about it. They just kind of observed everything that was going on, you know.
What did you think of your mom's boyfriend? Did you like him?
No, I did not like him.
You didn't? Did you tell your mom?
No.
Okay. What didn't you like about him?
Because I just felt like he wasn't there for us, you know. And my brother and sister felt the same way, that he really wasn't great at taking the place of my stepdad. That's all.
Okay. So here you are, you're 16 years old, your mom has a scary illness, you've got mom's boyfriend who's not all that communicative, your stepdad is not in the house, not in the picture, you're not even talking to your best friend about what's going on, and people at school aren't particularly noticing that you are becoming even more withdrawn, even more silent. And that was at the age of 16. Did things change at 17 and 18 for you?
No, because me and my boyfriend, we were dating for like 2 years. So we stopped when I was like 18, 19. But things did change a little. My mom did start to get better. She had surgery, and she started to get a little better. But also, my depression was coming from my boyfriend, because he was a cheater, you know.
Okay. And again, that's hurtful at any age. But as young as you were when you met him, and your first boyfriend, that can have a huge impact. Did you talk to anybody about that? About the fact that you thought he was cheating on you?
Not at the time. And then, after the relationship ended, I kind of blamed my best friend. Told him, I was like, "Hey, you did not tell me that he was going to be like a cheating boyfriend." And my best friend didn't have much to say. He just kind of looked crazy.
Did he know?
Yeah, he might not have. I thought he did, but he might not have. But I kind of put the blame on him.
So when you ended your relationship with your boyfriend, you're now about,
correct,
what, 18 or 19 years old?
Yes.
Okay, so again, that's a long time. From 16 to 18 or 19 is a long time, and there are lots of changes for you emotionally, physically, just the whole nine yards. So you're changing. Mom's gotten a little better. The impact of the breakup, talk about that.
Yes, I think that is why I had such a horrible time. And then I was going through depression, like from ages. I mean, I think it started set. It really, I really started showing signs of depression when I was like near 17. I hadn't got help yet. Like I was showing symptoms, but I hadn't got help, and I kept struggling with it until I was like almost 19. And that, when I was 19, I got put on medication.
Okay. Tell me, what were some of the symptoms that are some of the behaviors that you can recall as your depression started to grow? What was different?
I started sleeping I was sleeping more. I was withdrawn. I was having some trouble in school, but not a whole lot. And I just was acting kind of weird and strange.
Well, when you say weird and strange, what does that mean?
Just withdrawn and...
Okay.
Basically, withdrawn and really very, very quiet.
How was your eating? Do you remember?
My eating? I don't think it was good. Because now looking back, I think I wasn't eating as much as I should have.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, not really socializing as much. Not eating well, not sleeping well. Did your grades start to drop a little bit?
Yeah, not a whole lot, but they did drop some, yeah.
And so as, you know, nowadays, I mean, you know, we can look at a youngster, anybody going through those kinds of behavioral changes, and at least begin to wonder if, certainly be clear that something is going on, and wonder if it might be depression. But that was not your experience in school. How did you ultimately get to the point where you received medication, and was therapy a part of that?
Yes. I started having bad thoughts. And the thoughts didn't come for a long time, but it took like all the withdrawing and all the bad eating and sleeping. And then finally I started having like suicidal and homicidal thoughts in my head. And I knew something was really wrong. So I told my mom to take me to the hospital.
And did she?
Yes, she did.
Okay. Approximately 20% of teens will experience depression before they reach adulthood. And between 10 to 15% of teenagers have some symptoms of depression at any one time. So those are pretty significant portions of the teenage population. Depression increases a teen's risk for attempting suicide by 12 times. So these, again, are astounding numbers, and they're part of why I think today's conversation will be so important, because in just a moment, you will be meeting our guest who herself experienced teenage depression and has agreed to talk to us about what her experiences were. 30% of teens with depression also develop a substance abuse problem, and there are several reasons for that, but we know that when people are feeling sad, they will try to self-medicate very often, and substance abuse is a relatively easy path to go. It's something fairly easy to access. Depressed teenagers tend to have a smaller circle of friends. They take advantage of fewer opportunities inside and outside school. And they also tend to have trouble with school and with jobs and with relationships. So while I can't say to you that if your teen is experiencing any of this, that your teen is depressed, I can't say that to you. But what I can say to you is to be on the lookout for any behavioral changes within your child, teens or younger, and just pay attention. Be curious about what that might mean for your child. And so kudos to you for really understanding that there was something that you needed to do and reaching out to your mom to get that help. Tanika, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue. So stay right where you are. We'll be right back.
Tamika, at the age of, I guess you were 17 when you reached out to your mom to take you to the hospital.
Yes, around 17, yes.
Okay.
I think. 17 or 18.
Okay. Do you remember what it was like when you got to the hospital, how you were treated?
Yes, I do. They seemed, actually, to be honest, the hospital seemed understanding at first. They seemed understanding about the suicidal and homicidal thought, and they just gave me a gown to put on. My mom was there, and they were just asking me questions about how I was feeling and about my illness.
And that you were admitted, it sounds like, on the spot.
Yes, I was, yes.
And do you remember how long you were in the hospital?
Yes, I was in the hospital for a very long time. I mean, I think it was like 3 months because I was too scared to leave.
3 months in the hospital?
Yes, they wanted me to go home, but I kept telling them that I was not well enough. And they said, you get your we just put you on medicine and you go home. But the medicine was not working at first. At first, I was still having all the symptoms of depression.
You know, in today's world, a hospital stay of 3 months is astounding. Did you know that?
Yes, I know that, yes.
Yeah, it's astounding. During that period of time that you were in the hospital, what kind of treatment did you receive? Was it individual therapy? Was it group therapy? Was it medication only? What was going on?
It was everything. It was group therapy and individual. And yes, and it did prescribe me medication.
And did you find the therapies that you were receiving helpful to you?
They were helpful a little bit, but they weren't helping. They weren't curing what I had, and I was really worried about that.
Did they tell you what your diagnosis was?
No, they did not.
I'm going to guess they told your mom.
No, they didn't. They might have told her, but she didn't tell me.
Okay. As you were leaving the hospital, was anybody talking to you about preparing to sort of re-enter your life?
No, not really. They just told me I get my medicine and then I leave.
Looking back on that experience, what do you think would have been more useful?
If I had a better doctor, because the doctor, she just was not very understanding. I believe they knew where the problem was coming from, but they just didn't want to tell me.
And they'd have to have... They would have had to have given you some sort of diagnosis in order to determine what kind of medication to prescribe and to justify your being in the hospital for that length of time or being in the hospital period. They would have to have come up with a diagnosis. So I think you're right. They probably told your mom but didn't tell you.
Oh, no. They did tell me. I remember what it was now.
Okay.
It was schizophrenia.
Okay. And yes. Did they tell you what schizophrenia meant?
I think they did tell me that. Because we had like groups, and they would tell you what different, like bipolar, and what different illnesses were. We had on the worksheets that we had.
Okay. So what did you understand about schizophrenia?
What I knew most about it was that it you hear voices and you see things.
Okay. And is that what was happening to you?
It was, but I don't know. I'm not sure if that was the right diagnosis for me.
Yeah. You heard voices. You saw things. You were also, it sounds like from what you described, dealing with a depression, even while you were
yes,
in the
correct.
Hospital. Okay.
Yes,
and,
correct.
And the voices that you would hear, would they tell you to hurt yourself or to hurt someone else?
Yes. The voices, they weren't that bad. What I was hearing in the hospital was actually, it sounded like the voices of my family.
And what were they saying to you?
They were kind of observing me and saying, oh, she's doing this, she's doing that. And basically, they were just observing me and saying, oh, look at, this is what she's doing, this is what she's not doing.
So were they saying negative things about you?
No, they weren't.
Okay, they were just observing you. And when you
yes.
when you heard the voices, did they feel comforting to you or were they scary for you?
They were comforting to me.
Okay. And by the time you left the hospital, were you continuing to hear the voices?
A little bit, yes. Yes, I was.
Okay.
But then after a while, a lot of my symptoms stopped.
What were the symptoms that stopped?
Like the hearing voices, the suicidal thoughts, the seeing things.
So some really significant symptoms, perhaps with the medication, subsided and ultimately stopped.
Yes. I got a new doctor, and he put me on some he put me on a different kind of medication, and I think that helped a lot.
It sounds like it might have. What kinds of things were you seeing?
Like shadows and shadows and people.
Were they scary to you?
Yes, some of them were. Some of them were, but they weren't that scary. They were just, it was mainly shadows and just people, and I wasn't really that scared of what I was seeing.
Now, would you tell anybody while you were in the hospital that you were hearing these voices and seeing these things?
Yes, they knew that, but I did not tell them that it was the voices of my family. They didn't know that.
Okay.
But I did tell them that I was seeing things.
Okay. And had you been seeing things and hearing things before you got to the hospital?
No, I wasn't, no.
Okay. So while you were there, these symptoms emerged. And then with a second doctor, you were able to be treated, it sounds like differently, and given medication that actually resolved those symptoms.
Yes, that is correct, yes.
When you came out of the hospital, now you'd been away from your family and your friends and school for 3 months. What was that like transitioning back home?
It was kind of hard because the hospital, for some odd reason, I really liked being in the hospital because it just made me feel better that people were there trying to help treat my illness. So when I went home, it was a little harder because I didn't have people around me every day trying to help me get better.
And so when you were home, did you continue with therapy and medication?
Yes, I did, but it was like outpatient. It wasn't like a hospital. It was just it was a outpatient program.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Tell me about your decision to write The Girl with the Journal.
Okay. That started when I was in the hospital. I didn't know I was having trouble, so I just started writing my feelings down. I just knew that it would help me or someone else, because it was helping me a lot, because I was writing down what I was feeling about the people in the hospital and the people, and I wrote some things about my boyfriend, and it was a tremendous help to helping me get better.
You know, I think a lot of times people don't realize how useful writing can be, really just kind of getting it outside of yourself. Were you writing by hand or were you using a computer? How were you writing?
No, I was using a piece of paper and a pen, and I was writing on notebook paper.
Okay, that's the best way to do it. Do you know why I say that's the best way to do it?
No, why?
Because it allows you to connect more emotionally, more physically with what you're actually saying. When you start to write like this and you're doing it on your computer, your laptop, or whatever, you're kind of like a step removed and you don't feel it as intensely as if you're literally physically writing the words yourself. So that was great that that's what you chose to do.
Yes, I think it was. Yeah.
You know, I have a copy of your book in front of me,
and I'm
looking at the one that you wrote entitled Battle. Do you remember Battle?
Okay. Yes, I remember that one. Yes.
Tell us about that. Tell us about Battle.
That was all about my depression. I was saying, this battle I fight is not stronger than me. I was just writing, trying to tell you that you can get through this, you know? And I knew I could get through it because I have faith in God. So that is why I was writing it. I was like, you do not have to let this defeat you. You know, you can, and I was kind of writing it as like a, you know, like something to help myself, you know, get through what I was going through.
You know, the very first line where you say, this battle I fight, it's not stronger than me. I am the brave one, is such a powerful concept for you to have been able to experience and articulate and hold on to. Did you get the sense that people, family and friends, understood the battle you were going through?
No, I didn't get that sense from them. I know my mom was sorry, and she seemed really sad that I was going through this. You know, she would come to the hospital visit me. She bought me some stuff, like some snacks and stuff. Nobody in my family really understood, and that's why they were kind of standoffish from me. my mom was the biggest supporter, basically.
From what you know, was there anybody else in the family who had ever experienced what you experienced?
I know, but I believe someone in my family was mentally ill, and that is why, because they say it comes from genetics.
So you're thinking that somebody in your family perhaps had the diagnosis of schizophrenia or depression?
Yes, correct.
And in talking to your mom, was she able to give you any more insights into your family history?
No, because I didn't ask her. I didn't know that at the time that is what it was coming from.
I see.
So I didn't ask her. Yes, I didn't ask her. Yes.
For kids nowadays, let me ask you this, Tanika, how old are you today as we speak?
Today I am 33.
Okay. So yes. Several years ago, this was your experience. As you think about what you were going through as a teenager, and you think about the teenagers, you know, in the world today, what would you want them to be aware of in terms of perhaps feeling depressed or seeing things or hearing things? What would you want them to do?
I'd want them to talk to their families about it. Don't do what I did and just bottle it all up, and get help immediately and get on medication immediately, because eventually my medicine is what like really saves me. And so and make sure that they have the right doctor. If the doctor's not treating them right, then they should just request another one.
Absolutely. That's probably such powerful advice, because so many people, once they start with one doctor, whether they like him or her or not, whether they feel understood by him or her or not, they don't say anything and they just kind of stay there. And so your recommendation that you got to find a doctor who's a good fit, and only you can determine that. Somebody else can't let you know whether or not somebody's a good fit for you.
Yeah, that's right.
The entry that you wrote where you say, "Sadness haunts me." What was going on when you wrote that? Were you still in the hospital at that time?
Yes, I was in the hospital when I wrote "Sadness Haunts Me." It was about all how I was feeling down and blue, you know, like about my mom's breast cancer, about my boyfriend, about, you know, everything that I was experiencing. And so I was very, you know, I was extremely sad, you know, and that's why I was so withdrawn. I didn't talk to anybody, and that might have also scared people away from talking to me.
Well, it might have been, but, you know, hopefully the clinicians were able to talk to you and to be of help to you. It's interesting because you closed the last line of "Sadness Haunts Me" by saying, "I'll always chase away the happiness." And, you know, when you're dealing with depression, I think that is, well, I know that, and you know that is one of the things that you experience, that you just can't be happy. You're just not going to deal with happiness. It's not a possible emotion.
Right, that's correct.
Did you write the entire book while you were in the hospital?
No, I didn't.
Okay. But as you were writing it, did you tell anyone you were writing the book? I mean, it seems like you spent so much time really keeping to yourself. I'm wondering if you shared this with folks.
Nobody knew I was writing the book. I didn't tell anybody.
What was that about? Do you know?
No, I don't. I didn't know if they'd be interested. You know, my family knew that I like writing, but I didn't really think to tell them that I was writing a book.
So this was really something that you were doing for your own healing.
Yeah.
I am looking at Looking In You. And what's interesting about this is that you come to a realization that so many people tons of years older than you were at 16, 17, 18, and 19 don't come to. Do you want to tell us what Looking In You is about?
Yes, that was about my boyfriend. You know, I was like, I was looking at you and you're not exactly what I want. You know, I thought he was what I wanted, but when I first met him, but I really wanted someone who was like who was better than him. You know, like had a who could treat me could treat me better than he was treating me.
So again, in even in the title, Looking In You, and particularly at that age, but even older, so many people look at the person that they are wanting to be in a relationship with. And you're clearly saying, no, you need to go a little deeper. You need to look inside that person and see who they are.
Right, that's correct.
Tanika, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to continue. And I'd like to continue to talk a little bit more about looking in you and about your observations about the difference between a maybe friend and a true friend. So we'll pick up with that when we come back, and we'll be right back. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer, and you're listening to Mind Talk. And we will continue on the other side of the break with Tanika Jennings, who is the author of The Girl with the Journal and is sharing with us some really important experience in her life that I hope as you listen, you will be able to use in working with your own children and really thinking about your own circumstances. We'll be right back. Tanika, as we continue our conversation about the piece that you wrote entitled Looking In You, you make the observation that it's important to go out and find a true friend, that they, in fact, are worth the fight, and that one should not give up and just continue to look for true friends. That's quite, honestly, a mature observation for someone that age. How did you come to that realization, or did you feel like that was just a part of you?
I'm not totally sure how I came to that realization so early on. It was just like something inside of me that was telling me, look, Tanika, a lot of these people haven't supported you, and a lot of the only thing that could have told me that was kind of, you know, how everybody just kept silent about the illness I had.
Yeah. Let's move on to Is It Him? Can you tell us about Is It Him?
Yes. The reason I hooked up with my boyfriend was because I really wanted a boyfriend. You know, it's something I always wanted. And Is It Him was basically about, you know, is he the one? And at the time, for some odd reason, I thought my boyfriend was, but he really wasn't. And, you know, he turned out to be kind of a mistake, but I was glad that I did at least get to have a relationship with someone and know what a relationship felt like.
What do you think you learned from that relationship with your very first boyfriend?
I learned a lot of things about trust. You know, he just, I really couldn't trust him, and trust is what, you know, what you got to have for a good solid relationship. So I learned to get somebody better who would treat me better and who I could trust.
And trust is so critical in a relationship. You're absolutely right. Let's move on to silence. You say that you lie awake in silence. What's the value for you of being silent?
Talking can really get you in trouble. Your words can hurt sometimes, and your words can get you in trouble. So silence is basically about just a silent person who people appreciate. You know, people appreciate silence. You know, you don't always have to talk about everything that goes on in life. You know, sometimes it's better just to be quiet about some things, you know.
So sometimes silence is a good thing. Sometimes it's not.
Right.
I mean, because as we talked about before, there were some pretty huge open secrets in your household as you were growing up. But there are times when being silent is really quite okay and actually kind of soothing and helpful.
Right. That's what it was about. Yeah.
The idea that, and now I'm looking at another poem that you wrote, Peculiar. And you make the comment that our differences are what make us beautiful, which even as you and I speak today, I think we know that there are a whole bunch of people in the world who don't see differences as evidence of beauty. They see differences as evidence of wrong or less than. What would you say to those folks who don't think that differences are a good thing?
I would say, you know, to broaden the view of people, you know, and just know that your differences are meant for a reason, and that it's okay that if someone's not the same as you, you know, because differences are what everyone has, you know.
So recognize the reality that everybody is different in some way, and that's not a bad thing.
Right. Correct. Yes.
Tell us about your life today. What's going on now in your life?
I'm at a great place in my life today. I live in Nashville. I lived here for 9 years, and I love Nashville. You know, I think I came to Nashville for a reason, and that Nashville happened to me for a reason, and that it's just been a great place for me to be. And I think it was, you know, it helped a whole bunch with my depression. You know, I'm no longer depressed anymore. I mean, I still battled with depression, but my medicine helps me so much. I feel like a normal person. And Nashville, they have really accepted me and let me live a better life, you know.
How did you get to Nashville? When did you move? What was going on in your life that allowed you to move to Nashville?
I moved to Nashville when I was 24, and I decided that I wanted to write songs, and that is why I moved here, because I knew that Nashville was a big music scene place. So I moved here when I was 24, and started trying to get placement in songs and songwriting, writing for different people.
And how did that go?
It went well. I got a contract for it, but they did not know who wanted to sing the song, so it didn't get recorded. But I did get a deal with someone who would pitch the songs for me, so I was happy about that. You know, that I at least got someone who would pitch my music. You know,
that's a pretty big deal. Good for you.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Do you continue to write songs today?
Right now I'm working on another book. I haven't been writing songs for a while now, but I'm putting all my focus in my book because I also work.
Gotcha. So yeah, you have a day job you got to pay attention to, right?
Right. And then when I'm not working, I write my book.
When you moved to Nashville, at the age of 24. Uh-huh. Did you move with your family or did you move on your own?
Actually, I moved on my own.
Wow.
I know.
you just kind of picked up and said, see ya, and you moved.
Yes.
Were you nervous about that at all? Do you feel like you prepared for that move?
No, I wasn't nervous because I like living in different places. I like living away from my family. I found that out when I moved here being with my family wasn't maybe the right place for me, or the best the best place for me, you know.
But where you are now, you're taking your medication, you're going to work, you're working on another book, and it sounds like you're doing fine.
Yes, that's correct, yes.
Talk to us about I Am the Writer. That's a lovely piece. Uh-huh. Tell us about that.
Yes, I Am the Writer is about anybody who loves to write. It's just about, you know, I Am the Writer. I am an author, and I write down what I feel. I write down things that other people might not see. I am creative. I am the person that I want to be, and that that I can write for you. You know, it's just like it's just an expression showing that you can be a great writer, and that a writer is creative, and that and a person who knows what you may be feeling or need.
So anyone can who has ideas can really sit down and write them. It's okay.
Yeah, that's correct. Yes,
the real me. You start out by saying, in here is where I lock myself, and I throw away the key. I keep it all silent. No one knows the real me. Talk about that one.
Yeah, that one was when I was about when I was depressed, and when I first started depression, it was just about how I just kept everything in, and I didn't tell anyone, and that I know now that I should have. You know, it would have probably helped me a whole lot. But the real me is just, you know, and it's also about how I am a quiet person by nature, too. That's also what it's about.
And, you know, I think it's important for folks to really understand who they are. And I say that particularly in light of the piece that you wrote, I think it's called Somebody Else, where you say, I wanted to be so much like you, I forgot who I was. And honest to goodness, that is something that so many people, unfortunately, experience in relationships. They forget who they are inside these relationships.
Yeah, that is true, yes.
How did you come to that? How did you realize that that's what you were doing? And how did you get to a place where you were no longer dependent on sort of the other person's personality to tell you who and what you were? That sounds like quite a journey.
Yes. I got to that place basically by Nashville. You know, Nashville just taught me to be a better person, and it taught me that, you know, I can be who I want to be, you know, and that there are people out there who will appreciate me for who I am. I'm not as quiet as I used to be, but I am still a quiet person, and I know that a lot of writers are kind of like that, you know. They're just kind of quiet. But Nashville really taught me that I could be the person I want to be, that there are people who accept you, that you can, that your life can change for the better.
So you can kind of do your own thing, and it's okay.
Yeah.
The idea that, which is, again, very typical for a young person, that they have to have a boyfriend or a girlfriend. What would you say to teenagers or to the parents of teens, of young children who have that worldview right now? What would you like for the parents to be able to share with their children about having to have a boyfriend or a girlfriend?
I would like the parents to share with them that is not true, that is a myth, and that they can enjoy their youth without a boyfriend or girlfriend. I would encourage them to let them know that they need to wait until they fall in love, that they're really in love, and not just judge from face value of someone whether you want to be with them or not.
And, you know, it's so hard for many people as, you know, adults as well to figure out what love really looks like, what it really means to be in love. Have you come to a conclusion for yourself about what love would look like for you in a relationship?
Yes. The conclusion I came to was that it would just be someone who was honest with me all the time. And like I said, the trust issue, because the trust was what I had the most trouble with my boyfriend, because he was a cheater. So what love looks like for me is someone I can trust, someone who makes me happy, someone who also will be supportive of me and notice if anything is going wrong in my life and say something about it.
Do you think that, you've hopefully been through the worst of it. And you've said many times that not talking about it was the worst thing you could do. And you realize now that talking about it would have perhaps been a life changer for you. For those who are listening, who may themselves have a diagnosis or may be taking medication or anything like that, would you recommend that they let their friends and family know or not?
Yes, I do recommend that, yes. Do not keep it all inside because it will just eat you up. Let your friends, let your family know. Talk to them about it regularly. They will make you feel so much better. It will help you in your recovery, and it will be, you know, you will recover quickly, and it won't take its toll on your life.
What about telling a potential employer? Would you tell an employer that you're, because you don't have to, that you have a diagnosis and you're taking medication? What have you done?
Yes, I would tell them because, you know, sometimes a weakness isn't necessarily ugly. It can be a beautiful thing, you know. But I don't mind telling them. My employer knows about it.
Okay. And as far as you're concerned, your employer is supportive of you, and it kind of sounds like you're having a good time at work.
Yes, correct, yes.
That's wonderful. What are your goals for yourself, let's say 5 years from now? Where do you want to be? Will you be in Nashville?
Probably, yes. I probably still will be in Nashville because I love the city. I don't plan on leaving unless I have to.
All right. So it sounds like you found your home, the right place for you.
Yes. Yes, correct. Yes.
The passion that you have about talking to teenagers, young girls and young boys about depression and about what they can do differently in their lives, have you found that that sort of feeds something in you?
Yes, it does. It helps a lot, you know. It helps me look on the brighter side and know that whenever someone helps someone else, it always makes them feel better. So helping the youth, you know, understand this is a great thing. And I think that they need to pick up this book, and anyone suffering from depression needs to pick up the book and read it, because it's just, you know, it's a really, the book is a really great resource to have if you're going through that. And it just, and I just encourage the youth to read it, and I encourage them to get help as quickly as possible if they do have the same problem I had.
That is great and wise advice. Tanika Jennings, author of The Girl with the Journal, thank you so much for spending time with us today and being so candid about what your experiences were like as you begin to deal with your own illness and recovery. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Many times teenagers will act out in rebellious and unhealthy ways, and the parents will often see that purely as a behavioral problem and not recognize that that actually might be an indicator of depression. So if you are seeing your teen as acting out, pay attention to it. Don't assume that you understand what the basis is for it. And let me give you some examples of what untreated depression can lead to for teens. Certainly problems at school, running away, substance abuse, low self-esteem, self-injury, reckless behavior, violence, and as you heard me say earlier, suicide. Depression is a serious illness for anyone who's experiencing it, but particularly if you've got a teen who's experiencing it, you want to get them the right kind of help as soon as you can. In a report from teenhelp.com, the episodes of teen depression generally last about 8 months. Dysthymia, which is a type of mild, long-lasting depression, affects about 2% of teens, and about the same percentage of teens develop bipolar disorder in their later teen years. Teenage depression can affect a teen regardless of gender, social background, income level, race, or school or other achievements. Although teenage girls report suffering from depression more often than teenage boys are also less likely to seek help or to recognize that they suffer from depression, while girls are typically encouraged to express their feelings. Although you will notice in today's conversation that today's guest actually didn't share her feelings with anyone. She really kept it all to herself. So again, teenage depression can affect a child from any age, any race, any gender, any social status background, any educational background. It has nothing to do with those things. So don't assume that your teen is not experiencing depression because of fill in the blanks. Just be curious with your teen whenever you see a behavior change or anything that just causes you to question. Ask questions gently and clearly, but ask questions. And if you're not sure what you're hearing from your teen, take your teen to a medical or mental health clinician who can give you a real evaluation of what's going on with your teen, make an accurate diagnosis, and if a diagnosis is indeed in place, recommend treatment options. And folks, thank you for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk. You can listen to this program and all Mind Talk programs on demand at mindtalk.org. That's mindtalk.org. Mind Talk is provided daily as an educational public service and is not intended to replace treatment or consultation with a medical, mental health, or other professional. The managing producer is Jim Brown and 26 by 2 Communications. You are encouraged to send your questions or comments to me at pamela@mindtalk.org. That's PAMELA at mindtalk.org, mindtalk.org. And of course, for more information about Mind Talk, you can always go to the website, again, mindtalk.org. And folks, I want you to remember always, if it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable. And just before I head out the door, I want to just say again that teen depression is something that affects many people, many children. Be on the lookout for behavior changes. Don't ignore them, don't judge them, but do be curious. Thank you again for your time today.